I'm sending it to Angela. I'm going to tell her.
She'll be texting me.
Look at your girl. Look at your girl. This was her today. I'm going to tell her what it was about.
So vulgar.
I know.
You want me to make you a copy?
I was crying. I couldn't even look at you when I said it.
Listen.
I'll bring it right back. Okay. I'd like to resume the Government Ops Committee meeting for today, April 11th, 2023. A quorum is present. We left off at ONCA 23-41. The chair will entertain any motion.
One moment, sir.
Oh, 2341, Mr. Chair.
Was that postponed earlier?
I believe so.
Okay, moving on. Agenda item number eight, ONCA 23-48, an act to increase the amount of time for a protective order from 3 years to 5 years and establish an alternate effective date. The sponsor is Congressman Potts. Congressman Potts, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This one is also pretty straightforward. All this does is increase the amount of time for a protective order from 3 years to 5 years. This is a request from a constituent. What I can say, there's more work that needs to be done on this section of law. Changing it from 3 to 5 years is the one that I believe we could be ready to go forward with during this session. Some other issues that were pointed out were potential, lifetime protective orders, the need for emergency protective orders, the need for after-hour protective orders, all of which I'm definitely open to and believe that we should explore. However, I haven't been able to do that. So what I am comfortable moving forward with right now is meeting an immediate desire and request from constituent, just extending the amount of time from a protective order from 3 to 5 years. I think the other changes will require more time to work with our judicial branch, but this is something that is relatively standard, and I believe that this Congress can get behind it this session and move forward, and I'm happy to work with anyone else that would like to address this section of law on future changes.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Congresswoman Lemon, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Potts, just in the, you mentioned that it's just really straightforward, and it's just changing a protective order from 3 to 5 years. So I have never had to go through a court system to understand how protective orders work. And I think that there was a possibility that we have maybe some other folks know here. I do have a little pause on the 5 year, and it's not because I think a criminal should be running around or somebody awful should be out there. It's just that some scenarios come to play in my mind. And I worry that I believe in rehabilitation and rehabbing people. I believe that some of the best individuals and best citizens and people, community members, are people that have actually gone to prison, and they've turned their lives around. So I pause at the 5 year. I don't know if the work needs to come further in the fact that they maybe need to come up every year to see if there is a possibility that it is still in need, or even every 6 months. But 5 years is a really long time, especially if somebody, let's just give an example. I'm hypothetical. 18-year-old kid makes some really bad, just goes down a bad path. They've been down a bad path for a while, and somewhere along the way, they might end up at Thunderbird Youth Academy. I know a few of those folks. I know some most ages that have gone there and turned their lives around. But if they had a protective order at that time, and it's for 5 years, I worry that that's going to limit them in making that next step into the community level and being able to obtain jobs or things of that nature, that person would then be deserving of to be able to prove and be able to learn how to trust again. So I'm not really against talking about how to strengthen this and all the things that you mentioned before. I'm just not there yet for the 5 years. And I'm working through it and maybe better understanding it and hearing more. My next question is, have you heard from, do you know how that works at our system, at our court system currently, as far as how often they come back up? Is it just after 3 years they come up for renewal, And then What happens if the person who has the protective order, say that I have a protective order against Congressman, you know, Congressman Maker was some kind of way and I got a protective order from him. But what if we've made amends and I don't want that protective order to be there anymore and we're in year 2.5? Or you know, maybe I jumped, I don't know. I'm just thinking of different scenarios where I would not want to handcuff someone if they have made the correct amendments in their life and in their character and their, you know, and their moral compass is going in the right direction. Thank you.
Thank you.
Let me get Speaker Goodfox and then Congressman Paz. I'll allow you to respond to Congresswoman Lemon. Go ahead, Speaker Goodfox.
So my question is, so the way that the language, the way that I read it, is it automatic or does it allow for the judge to issue it up to 5? That is my question. Because they have the ability now to make it for a year or up to 3, but the way that I'm reading this, it's automatic. It's not a decision of the judicial branches after hearing arguments on both sides. Because number one, protective orders are actually very difficult to get. The evidence has to be compelling. And so that's my question. Does it allow for the judge to make a decision on up to 5, or are we saying we don't really care what you think, it's gonna be 5?
Mr. Chair, if I can respond, or would you like to add?
Well, I have the law in front of me, so I'm gonna read a little bit of it, if you don't mind.
Sure.
So I was initially opposed to this, but the states is 5, so make it uniform because our reservation has not been reaffirmed. So the majority of instances, unless they're on trust land, the law aspect of it, the state will also come in with the jurisdiction part also. So, but it says here, so Osage Nation Code 5404, subsection G, any protective order issued pursuant to this section shall be for a fixed period, not to exceed a period of 3 years. He's wanting to change the 3 to 5. It's important, it's mindful to be that means that, as Speaker Goodfox said, the actual merits have already been adjudicated. The order has been granted. You know, you've shown cause to get the protective order. What this language does, basically, because what being in court, what a lot of times happens is that, like, the parties will forget about it, like, 2 years in. But, you know, they moved on with their lives, blah, blah, blah. So what this does is when it hits that 5-year marker, just like what the state would do, for a fixed period, not to exceed a period of 5 years unless extended by the judge, modified, vacated, or rescinded upon motion by either party. So even the party... So once you hit that 5-year time, the person who can come, you know, can come back, the person who the protective order is against, per the language in the law, they can argue to show why it should be rescinded, basically, is the way it reads. Does that help clarify some? Because what a lot of times happens in these court hearings is, I don't even think lazy is the right word, but you have the PO issued, and then, like I said, the parties don't ever come back to petition within the time frame. So that PO is running the whole time. But go ahead, Congressman Potts.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And that's exactly where I was going to point in the provision. It's page 3, section G. This literally changes one word, is moving from 3 to 5. So direct answer to Speaker Goodfox, they could fix it for a year. They could fix it for 2 years. They could fix it for 3 years, 4, or 5. They just can't go past the 5. Current is 3. So there's still that wiggle room for a judge to pick that time. And to address other concerns, those are many of the same concerns I shared. You know, an individual member can reenter society after protective order. There's all of these extenuating circumstances. We don't want to punish somebody excessively for any reason to have a protective order. But at the same time, I also don't want to be in a position of making a victim relive trauma every 3 years as they go back to extend to these things. If you're already adjudicating a protective order, it's my belief that you can at least offer 5 years for the judge to make that determination at the time. And that's all this bill would do right now.
But it's important to note, just because someone is on a PO, they do not have to have a criminal action that justifies them being, you know, not able to be around someone else. That needs to be very clear as far as due process goes. You don't necessarily have to commit a crime for a judge to grant someone a PO against somebody else. So I think that needs to be said, and I would frankly be, you mentioned a lifetime ban. I would definitely be uncomfortable with something like that without a lot of due diligence and debate regarding that. So, but yeah, I definitely think this section of the law definitely needs to be looked at more, just because as far as practicality and every day, this kind of stuff is what the Osage people and our courts, I mean, they're tasked with a lot of activity related to POs and litigation, like, you know, related to that. So this is definitely something that all of Congress, we should really start looking into this and trying to find ways to make this law better.
Sure.
Speaker Goodfox? Yeah, go ahead.
Just, have you talked with judicial or even the program like domestic violence to have them weigh in, suggestions, comments, anything?
Mr. Chair.
Go ahead, Congressman Potts.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No, I've not reached out directly to them. This request came specifically from a constituent. So this wouldn't change any of their current operating procedures, which is why I haven't really reached out to them. There are other requests that would require changes in their operating procedures that I wasn't comfortable moving forward with until I speak with them, which is why those are not included in this bill. All this does is allow a judge to extend that period up to 5 years, or a period not to exceed 5 years. So I didn't really feel that that was necessary to reach out. Not for this change. There are other changes that I'm looking at that they will be in contact with.
Anyone else?
Mr. Chair?
Yeah, go ahead.
Make a motion to report ONCA 2348 to Congress with a due pass recommendation.
Second. There's a motion and a second to report out ONCA 23-48. All those in favor say yes.
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 Any opposed? There is none. Motion carries. Moving on, agenda number 9, ONCA 23-49, an act to amend 15 ONC 1-304 and 1-307 of the Congressional Subpoena Act and to establish an alternate effective date. The sponsor is Congressman Potts. Congressman Potts, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So ONCA 2349, there's really one change to the law. There are three portions that are impacted by this law, though. So current law at 15 ONC 1 through 4 states the subpoena authority of Congress. Having recently issued some subpoenas from this body, there has been some discussion about how we can strengthen this law to move forward as a body. So there are two sections within 1 through 04 that are changed. The first being Section B. It states that the jurisdiction of the Osage Nation Congress and its committees to issue subpoenas shall be as stated in Article 2 of the Osage Nation Constitution. Article 2, Section 2 of our Constitution states the jurisdiction of the Osage Nation, and it states that the jurisdiction of the Osage Nation shall extend over all persons, subjects, properties, and over all activities that occur within the territory of the Osage Nation and over all Osage citizens, subjects, property, and activities outside such territory affecting the rights and laws of the Osage Nation. Nothing in this article shall be construed to limit or impair the ability of the Osage Nation to exercise its jurisdiction within or without its territory based upon its inherent sovereign authority as a nation of the Osage people. So we're basically inserting constitutional language into law to strengthen our subpoena authority. The next change I'll address actually flows directly with that, and it's, to skip around a little bit, I apologize, it's in 15 ONC 1307, and that is in, I think, all sections. Currently, the law states all Osage Nation employees,
officers
and employees, Okay, yes. All association officers and employees. So this would change to all persons shall be obligated. And that language is drawn directly from Article 2, Section 2. It states the jurisdiction of the association shall extend over all persons. So it inserts that constitutional language into Section 1307. Now for the actual change to the law, that's in Section 1304E, dealing with the period of time for which a congressional subpoena is valid. So under current law, a congressional subpoena expires as a new Congress is seated. There's no option for the next Congress to continue the subpoena issued by a previous Congress. This came into question as we recently issued subpoenas. Myself, some other members were concerned that, well, you know, the person can fight, take that to court, challenge it in court, and extend that, and essentially all they have to do is run out the clock, and the subpoena essentially expires, and the next Congress would have to start over completely. I think that that's a disservice to our body, as no more than, even if it was a wave election, no more than 50% of us could be changed in one election. And so I believe the sentiment to get on board with a subpoena, even through the committee process, still requires six individuals, five from the committee, and then the speaker's signature as well. So you would still be carrying forward at least the desire of some members of the Congress. So what this does, this change would say that the new Congress shall act within 60 days to renew the subpoenas. If they fail to act within that 60-day period, it expires. So there's still the automatic time clock on there of 60 days after the new Congress is seated. But this change gives the new Congress the ability to continue the existing subpoena process that's in place from the previous Congress without starting the clock and without starting the legal process entirely over. So with that, those are the three changes that I'm proposing in 2349.
Mr. Chair?
Go ahead, Congresswoman Lemon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I visited just briefly at lunchtime a little bit with Congressman Potts and a few other members of the of Congress, and I am in support of this these changes and additions. Adding the jurisdictional piece, you know, that paragraph B is adding to this, which is a change, but and then the all persons. I found it really interesting that our law was like Osage Nation officers and employees. And so I thought, that doesn't contain all persons at all. And so I'm 100% behind that, Congressman Potts. And the fact that the page one, paragraph E, when it talks about when in a subpoena expires, you know, we've all gone through this process now with the hearing that we had and understanding the subpoena process, and we all learned something, I believe, from that. And one of the things that was really on my mind, and I know that it was on others' minds too, but I had deep conversations with Congresswoman Rivard, and you know, being the chair and vice chair of commerce, was, you know, we're up against a time clock here, essentially, and why would we want to handcuff ourselves? And I've said that a million times, you know, why would we want to handcuff ourselves? I've said it on many of, you know, things towards you, Mr. Potts, about, you know, we had to be careful about painting ourselves into a corner and you know, setting unobtainable goals, which this isn't a goal, but it's just a phrase to utilize. So the thing for clarification, Mr. Potts, which I think you clarified earlier, but I just, one more time, if you would. Right, when a new Congress is seated, if they choose not to take this matter up at all of the prior subpoenas, it automatically dies, like prior to it automatically died when a new Congress seceded. So it's something that they're gonna have to be up on also, on the fact that there's subpoenas out there hanging around and you might be in the beginning of an investigation or in the middle of an investigation or whatever. So it gives the opportunity, and I agree with you, and it would be a disservice to not be able to continue down that road, or a road, if you were in the midst of an investigation, or you were in the midst of trying to get some hearings scheduled, or something of that nature. So I appreciate you for bringing this forward, and I support this legislation. Thank you.
Thank you, Congresswoman Lemon. Is there anyone else that would like to speak on this bill?
Mr. Chair?
Go ahead, Congressman Potts.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to make a motion to report ONCA 2349 to Congress with a due pass recommendation.
Second.
There's a motion and a second to report out ONCA 23-49. All those in favor say yes.
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 Any opposed? Motion carries. Moving on to agenda item number 10.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
ONCR 23-09, a resolution supporting the Cherokee Nation's assertion of its treaty right to a delegate in the United States House of Representatives. The sponsor is Congressman Hamilton. Congressman Hamilton, you have the floor, sir.
Thank you. This was sponsored to support an initiative that Cherokee Nation is going through right now to get one of their treaties recognized to send a delegate to the House of Representatives. They've received support from the five tribes, NCAI, the governors, the Pueblo Governors Council, I believe Northwest Alliance Tribes. And this doesn't affect the Osage Nation directly, but just in the taste of, or in the support of sovereign effort from another nation to get their treaty recognized by the government. I just think the nation should get behind this effort. And I think I filed it and Congressman Potts co-sponsored. I'm also welcome to other co-sponsors for doing it. I did reach out to some Cherokee dignitaries. Joe Bird Sr., he wanted to thank the Congress just for their interest in this and their support. I did reach out to Councilman Joe Deere. He also extended his appreciation for this and also reached out to the Cherokee Nation appointed delegate, Kim Teehee, who's responded back that her appreciation for us to have us on our radar as well. There is information on the Cherokee Nation website, some historical information about their specific treaty. Other than what I've just said, if there's any questions from the committee, I would appreciate a movement on this.
Thank you, Chair. Congressman Hamilton. Go ahead, Congressman Bickhorst.
Yeah, if there's no further question or comment.
Yeah. I'd like to say something real quick.
Okay.
You know, we're currently involved in litigation ourselves with the Osage Nation Reservation. And the law is crystal clear that Congress never disestablished this reservation, and we have a tough litigation fight ahead. In this post-McGirt world, there's been a lot of pushback from the state regarding these treaty rights for these tribes, us included. And I'm happy to see this go through the Osage Chambers helping the Cherokee Nation, because we're all united as tribes in Oklahoma. And like I said, there's just kind of been a general ignorance and pushback from a lot of top-ranking state officials against sovereignty and the rule of law. These treaties are in the U.S. Constitution. They're the supreme law of the land. There's not any vague language. It's crystal clear. It's just a matter of wanting to recognize what is law and what is right. So I just wanted to say that much as the chair, and I think this is a great thing that Congressman Hamilton did. So thank you. Go ahead, Congressman Bickhorst.
Thank you, sir. If there's no further comment, I'll make a motion that we send ONCR 2309 to Congress with a due pass recommendation.
Second.
There's a motion and a second to send out ONCR 23-09 with a due pass recommendation. All those in favor say yes.
Yes.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Moving on, Chairwoman. Go ahead, Congresswoman Shaw.
Thank you, Chair. Motion to report ONCA 23-51 with no recommendation.
Second. Discussion.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is the, we didn't make any movement on this bill earlier, so it's still here on our table. I just kind of wanted to clarify that. It's not anything new that's been added. And anyways, I just wanted to say that it's Congresswoman Stabler's benefits bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Congresswoman. Chair, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
Oh,
hang on. We got to vote on the
movement.
Movement for 23-51. Is that correct? Yeah, roll call, please.
Congressman Big Horse?
Yes.
Congressman Maker?
Yes.
Congresswoman Shaw?
Yes.
Congresswoman Lemon?
Yes.
Congressman Keene?
Yes. Point of order. So was that a motion for no recommendation for 2351?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Motion to adjourn.
There's been a motion to adjourn. Is there a second?
Second.
There's been a motion and a second. All those in favor say yes.
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 We are adjourned. Thank you.